Hey everyone, it's me, Kyrie. So the day this episode is going up, well, it's a weird time. I know it's kind of a joke at this point that being an American means you're gonna see the most vile thing happen, with only the events of the next day somehow surpassing that. But today, the Supreme Court of the United States overturned the right to abortion, taking away what should be an unambiguous, universal right to all people at all times with no exceptions. It is an utterly despicable act that can only be topped by the countless previous despicable acts that the US government enacts on a daily basis and whatever fucked up thing they come up with next. It's pretty bad. This podcast is a show about going through a series that we really like together, but the subject matter of the game certainly makes light of atrocity and tragedy via its extreme melodrama. As a result, often on this podcast, we have a way about joking about this stuff that can certainly come across as glib. While humor is a defense mechanism, I just wanted to take this moment of your time and attention to say that we realize things are really hard out there. The constant barrage of bad news and challenges can just wear you down quickly. It's really hard out there, and we get that. And I don't want to give the impression that, you know, we don't care. The goal for Ultimate Despair Reprise has been and always will be a thoughtful analysis of a series that we hold dear, and that's not changing. But in this moment, I wanted to state that we stand in solidarity with the people, the resistors, the silenced, and the marginalized. It is not politicians or institutions that make the world work, it's the people. The themes of Danganronpa are often muddied, but it makes it clear that the answer to despair is to hold on to hope and fight back. Whatever hope you can find, no matter how small of a shred, it can give you the power to fight against whatever comes your way. So, enjoy this episode. From here on, this is just going to be, you know, just a normal episode. And if nothing else, we hope that this can provide you with some comfort in these difficult times. Just remember, love each other and keep fighting. And now, on with the show.
Danganronpa. Yeah, I'm hitting record. I just hit record.
All right, get into the position.
Yeah. I've hit record as well.
Whoa. Whoa. Okay. Yeah, like, get into position. Like, I didn't hear anything about that.
Well, the strange sexual energy coming from Danganronpa, notwithstanding.
I was going to say, like, I didn't know it was this kind of podcast. If I did, I would have, you know.
You would have suited up.
I don't know. Yeah, I would have suited up. I would have gotten my I'm kind of just wearing like sweats and slippies now. Like, this is a little.
That could be its own version of, you know what? Never. All right. Let's do the countdown. All right. You know,
3
2
1
This matter if these voices in your head say yes or no, where to go, you can live without them. Stardust, the game that chooses fate as if there's no choice. Dead or alive, you can find a way to freedom. Go out even if your heart can't cope with the fear in your doubts. You can get through even if they will hold. What to do for what cause, what to have for what loss. It's hard to know at first, but you
They should put Komaeda in Battleborn.
New game patch for, because we're talking, you know,
this game's been dead for like 5 years. Pop Komaeda in there though, just to see what happens.
All the Tumblr fangirls just like lose their minds. Battleborn becomes like
number That's how one. You revive Battleborn, yeah. Cliffy B should do that with that like Fortnite game that he was trying to with that like Fortnite
Radical Heights.
Yeah, what's more radical than Komaeda?
I'll tell you what's radical. We're finally back for Ultimate Despair Reprise, a Danganronpa recap podcast going through the entire Danganronpa series, one murder at a time. I am the ultimate host, Kyrie.
I'm the ultimate fangirl, Jennifer.
I'm Jackie. I think I'm a reserve course student. I think that might be my niche.
I was
an ultimate in previous seasons, but I think I've been demoted. This is a prequel, so I'm not yet ultimate.
It is appropriate because we are finally tackling the subject of the finale of the Hope's Peak trilogy.
It's not a trilogy. There's three games and then there's this anime.
There's been three games already. This is two seasons of anime. This is like a quadrilogy.
The reason I say it has three in the title, for one. Two. UDG and UDG is like kind of like it's a side game. It's weird where that fits in the timeline because it's like,
yeah,
it's like, I don't know, it comes up, but we are I like calling it the finale of the Hope's Peak trilogy because it's kind of what it is. It is, I mean, the subtitle is it, like, full thing is Danganronpa 3, the end of Hope's Peak Academy. It is pretty clear where this anime is going. They're basically trying to put, like, a bow on the entire thing. And this is a... It's interesting, like, real quick, the way you watch this in, what was it, 2016 when it aired?
Yeah, it was unhinged. It would air the future arc on, like, Mondays. Monday or Wednesday. And then on Wednesday, it would air the Despair arc, which is like the prequel, and it would just do that. Like 2 days later, you would watch the prequel, and it is like we see in the first episode that Chisa is like reacts to her own death in like the the movie theater, which I think that's cute. I really like that.
Yeah, it's really cute. And real quick before we get into it, we are covering the first four episodes. So as long as you watch this show in its broadcast order, you are fine. Also, if you're watching this on Crunchyroll, it does order the episodes in the proper order.
Yeah.
That being said, the Blu-ray is a problem.
Meanwhile, the sick motherfuckers at Funimation decided, hey, what if we made more money from this by, like, selling the future and despair arcs as, like, separate things? So each time you have to go to the next episode, you have to pop out the disc and put in the other one.
Yeah, that is horrifying. I'm reasonably sure The Hague made like rules against that.
And you'd think they would take advantage of like the two, like it's treated like two simultaneous seasons of anime, but you would think like, I mean, I don't know, this is probably like a production reason. You obviously keep the same animation team, but I don't know, it would have been interesting to have like two different studios working at the same time on the show, but
that sounds like actual hell to coordinate.
Oh yeah, though. Absolutely. No, duh, no shit. That would be like a huge problem for everyone involved, and it's already kind of.
It would
of
be a very Danganronpa thing to do, though.
Yeah, I don't know. So yeah, the core conceit of Danganronpa 3 is that the future arc takes place basically immediately after the events of Danganronpa 2, and the Despair arc is the prequel leading up to the events of Danganronpa 1. So you're kind of seeing the beginning and end of, like, kind of the whole timeline, like, mixed together. But yeah, this isn't, you know, canon. This is, like, yeah, official project everything. Like, this is the end. It's been interesting. And, like, I don't know. Like, Jeff, what were your thoughts, like, before you even started watching this show, like, back in the day?
Back in the day, I was kind of, I kind of only watched it just because I was planning on covering Danganronpa V3 for A Novel Not New, and, I was just going through the entire series, so I'd be like, okay, I'm going to have complete and total context with this game going forward. And
which is really funny because V3 has almost nothing to do with, like, every game that came before it.
Yeah, like, there are some things here and there, but yeah, it's a situation where it's like, this anime has some pretty entertaining moments, but also, like, while I was watching it, I definitely got the impression that, like, okay, they saw what they clearly did that other anime adaptation of the first game, and they were like, hey, just flat out translating a visual novel to a show doesn't work out so well, so let's make this an entirely different thing. And in some cases, it works in its favor. In a lot of cases, it's not really what I come to Danganronpa for.
So, you know what? I just realized I had a vision of how this season of UDR is going to go. I think, Jen, you and Jackie, you're going to be on the same wavelength, and I'm going to be the Danganronpa 3 defender.
Like, there's some cool stuff about it. Like, seeing the remnants of despair in action is like, holy shit, this is awesome. But, it's also a show that, like, has some very low lows, and also the death game just isn't as interesting as, like, the normal Danganronpa death game.
I mean, Danganronpa as a series has some low-ass lows.
Yeah. I know, yeah.
We get some low-ass lows in the episodes we watch.
I think that Danganronpa is, like, the reigning king of squandering potential. And that is certainly not, that's certainly not something that they, lightened up on with this series. Like, there is certainly a lot of feeling of, like, okay, what if the second half followed the cast of the second game? But, like, because it's a prequel, all the character development is rolled back. So, like, we see everybody that we kind of grew attached to. Like Hiyoko, for instance.
Yeah,
when Hiyoko. I saw her, I'm like, oh, it's Hiyoko, you know? I like Hiyoko. And then she's just kind of like a dick, and it's like, oh no. All right, no.
But before we go into it, let's real quick. So normally on this show, we like to go through all the voice actors that show up, all the characters, but this show has a lot of characters and a lot of returning ones. So we're just going to kind of speed run through this just so that everybody can kind of stay on the same page. With regards
all right,
to
I'm
characters.
Gathering velocity now. We're going to skip right to the end.
Quick note, two quick notes. There will be more characters that are mentioned later on, but we'll bring them up when they're relevant to the story. And the English voice cast is just this huge can of worms, because, like, you have actors who played characters in the game, but not in the show, and then some of the actors in the show are doing double or triple duty. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, like, just to jump briefly into that, just because, like, this isn't something we covered because we kind of skipped the Danganronpa 1 anime, the localization for Byakuya is entirely different, not only voice-wise, but writing-wise, between the video game dub and the anime dub.
Don't they call him Mono Bear in, like, the official subtitles? It's weird.
Really great time to be a weeaboo right now.
Yeah, it's so funny. Anyway, so real quick.
Like, none of this matters to me. I don't engage with English, with the English dub at all. Unless it's, like, notably good.
Yeah. There's some amazing dub outtakes for this show.
We'll get into those. But real quick, so returning, we're going to start with the future arc. The returning cast, we have Monomi, Makoto, Kirigiri, Aoi, Hagakure, and then... And then these are the new characters with either they have a changed voice actor or new character altogether. First one's Monokuma, believe it or not. Monokuma is now being voiced by a woman that goes by the pseudonym Tarako. She voiced 03 in Virtue's Last Reward and Maruko in Chibi Maruko-chan, which was like an old anime. And the reason for that is quite sad. Nobuya Oyama, she was the woman who voiced, you know, Doraemon and Monokuma for the previous games, but in 2015 she announced that she was living with dementia and could no longer, like, do voice roles anymore. And so per Oyama, what she wrote around the time when Tarako took over for the character, I leave it in your hands, Tarako-san. Monokuma is a very cute and good boy, so take care of him. So it's a little bittersweet passing of the guard to Turako, who will voice Monokuma in this show, in the stage plays, and in V3 when that becomes relevant. But yeah, and just briefly, I think she does a good job in this anime. She kind of finds the character again in V3, and we'll talk about it when we get the V3, but, you know, it's kind of hard to think about, like, you know, how Oyama is no longer voicing the character, but...
Yeah, I mean, we wish Oyama the best.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Like, woman voiced Doraemon for decades, you know? And next character, Kazuyo Tengen, the former director of Hope's Peak. He is voiced by Hidekatsu Shibata, who voices Fuhrer Bradley in Fullmetal Alchemist and Count Mecha in Galaxy Express 999. This guy's been acting since 1957. He has a great voice, great range, love him. Kyosuke Munakata, who is the former Ultimate School school council president, and it shows, voiced by Toshiyuki Morikawa, who voices Yoshikage Kira in JoJo's Part 4 and Griffith in the various adaptations of Berserk. Apparently, he is the dub voice for Tom Cruise, Adam Sandler, and Brendan Fraser in Japan.
Yeah, versatile. He's a versatile actor.
Very versatile, but it's just very funny to think of, like, fucking, like, Tom Cruise opening his mouth and then the Kira monologue starts playing.
Are you telling me that's not what happens every time Tom Cruise opens his mouth?
Yeah, that's like the plot of Tom. Literally,
every time I see Tom Cruise, every time I run into him in the street, he says, "Listen, when I saw the Mona Lisa, I got a boner." And I was like, okay, cool. Okay, cool, Tom. I don't know why you're telling me that.
Tom Cruise would just come up to someone. Remember that video he did when he talked about returning to the cinema? It was the most unhinged thing ever.
He's an unhinged guy. Okay, next.
Tom Cruise is fucked up.
Koichi Kizakura, who is the former Hope's Peak scout, like high school scout. He scouts talent. He's voiced by Keiji Fujiwara, who voices Mei Hughes, Fullmetal Alchemist, and Leo Rio in Hunter x Hunter. Another tragic past, like, he unfortunately passed away in 2020 at the age of 55. Great voice actor. I've loved his performance as Maze, and but he does pretty good in this show as well. I appreciate him. And Keiji Fujiwara, what a great actor. Seiko Kimura, who is the former Ultimate Pharmacist, voiced by Saki Fujita. She voiced Mihiro Inami in Working. And, you know, that funny little idol called Hatsune Miku, she provided the sample voices that they used for that program.
See, that one fucks me up because, like, her performance in this is much more feral than Hatsune Miku.
Well, yeah, because Hatsune Miku is a computer.
Yeah. But she's voiced, like, she is an industry veteran. She's been going at it since 2005, so.
Yeah. And basically, but, you know, her voicing and creating the voice for Hatsune Miku, basically responsible for an entire shift of idol culture in the 2000s and onward.
Yeah.
Crazy. Juzu Sakakura, the former Ultimate Boxer, voiced by my boy Junichi Sawabe, who voices Shofukan in Thunderbolt Fantasy and Archer in the Fate series. He is apparently in a band called the Pharaoh Men. I might have to look up those CDs.
God, what a cool name for a band.
That's a cool... Yeah, it's Pharaoh Star Men. What a cool name.
Oh, like Pharamone. I'm sorry. I looked at it and I heard it. I looked at it after I heard it. Like, I thought Pharaoh Men, like...
No.
Like, pharaohs.
No.
And I was like, oh, that is a sick fucking name. I don't know why you would call yourself that, but that's sick.
Yeah.
That rocks.
Next character, Miyaya Gekugahara. Who is the former Ultimate Therapist, does not have a speaking voice, but in this show, she types stuff out and voices her opinions through an avatar of Monomi from Danganronpa 2. She has a nice scarf, though. I like it. It's cute.
Yeah.
And Ruruka Ando, who's the former Ultimate Confectioner. She is voiced by Inori Minase, who voices Carol. Let me see if I can get this. Carol Malice Dienheim? From Simple Gear?
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah, and Rem from Re-Zero.
It's a Simple Gear character name.
Yeah,
so
Simple, like... yeah. Carol from Simple Gear and Rem from Re-Zero. Apparently has had multiple live tours and performed at the Tokyo Garb. Yeah.
She has like an actual musical career.
Yeah, a couple of albums to her name.
Yeah, she's out here.
Yeah. And then we got Sonosuke Izioi, the former Ultimate Blacksmith, voiced by Takuya Iguchi, who voices Takedo Gouda in Ore Monogatari and Lloyd Forger in Spy Family. Love Spy Family. Great show. You should be checking that out. Apparently won the Best Voice Actor Award in the New Type Anime Awards in 2015. Decorated, good, like, great voice actor. I love his performance as Lloyd. Good stuff.
Yeah, this show's shaping up to kind of be a who's who in the industry. Like, these are all super high-profile names.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Including, which leads us into our next one.
Which is the most bizarre casting choice of all, Daisaku Bandai, the former Ultimate Farmer, voiced by Rie Kugamiya.
The Rie herself.
Also voiced Taiga Aisaka from Toradora and Kagura from Gintama. Wait,
yeah.
But she is, yeah, she's playing the big black man.
She has played every tsundere you have ever experienced in an anime. And I mean, that's the joke, is that she's voicing a black guy, which is kind of,
like,
kind
of iffy. We'll save that. We'll touch that in a little bit. We'll touch that in a little bit. Yeah. We'll leave it right there. And she basically also, yeah, you're right, started the entire tsundere craze basically by herself. And Shauna clones as well. I remember hearing that back in the day. And Great Gozu, the former Ultimate Wrestler, voiced by Kenta Miyake, who voices All Might in My Hero Academia and Scar in Fullmetal Alchemist, winner of Best Actor in a Supporting Role at the 13th Seiyuu Awards, which was, I think, in 2019? Something like that. He's doing his All Might voice, you know, more or less, but I love the All Might voice, so it's
fine.
Oh,
yeah, he rocks. It's he kills in it. He kills it.
Then real quick, for the Despair arc, we have the entire cast of Danganronpa 2 returning. So the 16 main characters from that game show up. But returning with a new voice, we have the ultimate imposter.
Susamogus?
Yep, Susamogus. Kanata Hongo, who is the imposter's current disguise at this point in the timeline. Next character, who is big fan of, Chisa Yukizomi.
Yukizomi.
Yes, the hopes she is a teacher of these students and the former ultimate housekeeper. Voiced by Mai Nakahara, who voiced Reina Ryugu in basically every Higurashi thing you ever saw, and Nagisa Furukawa from Clannad, which is just a very funny choice that, like, this woman who has voiced, like, major visual novel characters is voicing this wacky teacher.
It's appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah, she has great range. She also voices Nanami in Katanagatari, which I think is roles that I've seen her do, that's probably my favorite, because she's very good at, like, the subtle, like, movements of the voice, like subtly evoking things with her voice.
Mm-hmm. Which makes sense, because she's been a singer since 2002 with 5 studio albums to her credit.
Yeah, she's out here.
Out here. Then Jin Kirigiri, Kyoka's father, he is the current principal of Hope Speak Academy, voiced by Kape Yamaguchi, you know, the guy who voiced L in Death Note and Inuyasha Inuyasha. You've heard him before. He's very familiar. He voiced Hifumi in Danganronpa 1 and a bit part as Makoto's father in Danganronpa the Animation. And then, last but not least, we have Ryota Mitarai, the ultimate animator, voiced by Kanata Hongo, his, like, one anime credit, like, he has a few of them, but his big anime credit is Ryota Sakamoto from Batum, and he also played Akagi Shigeru in the Akagi live-action drama. This is a guy who's mostly known for film and stage roles, actually. He even played Makoto in the play adaptation of Danganronpa 1. A little bit of lineage there. And that's basically all the characters.
Yep.
So this has quite the cast.
Yeah. Yep,
and then they're going to start killing each other off.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, you're in a Danganronpa game, you're gonna kill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, where the show starts is that Makoto, coming back from his little experiment over on Jabberwock Island, is basically returning to the Future Foundation's headquarters, and immediately upon... he's handcuffed when he gets into the room, like, immediately upon arrival. You're like, oh, hey, what's going on, guys? Everyone's like, okay, arrest him immediately. We're going to get to the bottom of this. Because since Makoto has been, like, hiding the entire,
he hid the entire, like, the whole Neo World program from the Future Foundation, and they're pissed. Especially fucking, Sakakura, the ultimate boxer, guy voiced by Shofukan, fucking hates this dude, wants to, like, beat the shit out of him any moment.
Yeah, they think that A, he is secretly a member of Despair, and B, maybe colluded with Junko to, like, get out of the original Danganronpa 1 scenario.
But, the original killing game, yeah.
Yeah, the original killing game. But as they're discussing what to do with him, a bunch of bombs start going off, and suddenly everyone is, like, stuck within the building. And all the security guards are dead, too. And Monokuma comes on screen and more or less...
says it's Danganronpa time, baby.
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely, it segues right into Danganronpa. Like, same great flavor, same great, you know, listen, if you liked Danganronpa 1 and you liked Danganronpa 2, let me tell you a little bit about Danganronpa 3.
May I interest you in a third course?
Only this
it's
time.
It's more of the same, and I mean that in every way. Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. The key difference this time is it is a speedrun. It's basically a death game on speedrun mode where everyone is wearing these bracelets that put them to sleep after 2 hours, and much like Werewolf or something like that.
I mean,
the
it's
one,
exactly the rules of Werewolf.
Yeah, one killer wakes up. Yeah, the one killer wakes up and is going to take someone's life. And Monokuma is claiming that if everyone happens to find the killer and kill them before they go to sleep. Go. Yeah, basically.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, go ahead.
So the gimmick is essentially everybody is forced nap time, and then the killer awakens and picks somebody, and then they have to vote the killer out. This is also supplemented by NG codes, which are the new thing, which are the new hotness. Every character has some secret thing that they cannot do. And, I think this is actually a really good twist on the format.
I like the NG codes a lot, actually.
Yeah, like, I think it adds, like, a little bit of spice to it. Like, you know, what, like, Makoto's is that he can't run in the hallways, which I think is really funny.
Yeah.
But
also, go ahead.
I mean, the idea of, like, okay, yeah, you have, like, a weird esoteric thing that you can't do or you will die. I would like to see that in one of the games. I feel like, because it answers the question of, like, oh, why don't they just do this? And because, like, oh, you know, you have a problem where, like, you have to get somebody else to do it because your NG code says, oh, I can't, like, open doors, or I can't, you know, I can't climb a ladder, or yeah. I can't read text aloud.
Sure.
Or something like that.
Yeah, the only and biggest problem with this mechanic is it is demonstrated by killing the comic black character immediately. It's basically the boxer ends up going to beat the shit out of Makoto, and all of a sudden Bandai is bleeding from one of his eyes and keeling over.
Yeah.
And it turns out his wristband said, oh, you can't watch anyone commit violence.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's a good introduction and good setting the stakes of what this system actually does. Like, because Monokuma has bullshitted before.
Absolutely.
So I like that it's just like, oh yeah, no, he's not bullshitting. I also like that the poison makes you into a Monokuma. Like, your left eye bleeds and your left side turns purple. And it's like, oh, you vaguely resemble a Monokuma.
Yeah.
Also, I'm actually extremely down for killing Rie Kugami's character. Extremely one-note character, and the joke actually kind of sucks.
Yeah, so it's good that, like, it the character is written out. And also, I was thinking about it, like, when watching the episodes, it's like, okay, I understand how a bunch of, like, writers in a writer's room can arrive at the conclusion of, isn't it funny when the big black character has a funny voice, and then also, like, they're not the first to die in this, like, ostensibly horror work. I mean, that goes to Chisa, but also they are, it's one of those
they're the first, like, to die on screen.
Yeah, basically. And it's like, guys, you probably should have, like, thought about this for, like, longer than 2 seconds.
Yeah, insanely tactless character, definitely written by a group of, like, a group of people who are not, like, marginalized. I don't think that, like, I don't think it's really worth loudly condemning, because I just, it is, it's stupid in a benign way.
But still not but, great. But we're
yeah, it's
bringing up.
Juggling a caustic subject.
Sure.
Yeah, and we're gonna have plenty of stupid things to bring up on this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Even on this episode alone.
Yeah.
We pounded back, like, 2 hours of anime. We are gonna, like, we are delving right into the depths of, like, shit's dumb.
Yeah, but, I mean, back to the IG code stuff, though. Like, I really like how, like, Makoto, like, it's kind of interesting. Like, Monokuma shows up on screen, and he basically makes his declaration to Makoto. It's like, yeah, this is basically you and I's, like, final duel, right? Is like, this is where it all ends. I'm gonna make you, like, I'm going to break you, right? Like, making that challenge. And Makoto, he tries to, like, solve the problem at the start the same way he solved Danganronpa 1, because, like, well, that's how he solved it last time. But the NG code stuff basically was, like, everyone who's, like, even vaguely distrustful of him, we're just like, no, fuck you. I'm not going to tell you my weakness. Because, like,
I mean, it definitely helps that, like, everybody in the Future Foundation kind of views him as a traitor.
Yes. That's
like, there is an inbuilt hostility into things.
Right.
Which I think makes the environment more interesting.
It makes it more interesting, but also I feel like it reveals early on that many of these new characters are kind of one note. Like,
oh yeah,
you had a whole range of different personality types in previous in the various games and stuff, but a lot of people here are, like, good at swords, good at boxing, good at using medicine to Hulk out and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's kind of clear. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I don't want to. I'm sorry for interrupting, but I don't really think that's necessarily a bad thing, because this is this is an anime. Mm-hmm. Which is going to run for 12 episodes instead of a game that's going to run for, like, 20 to 30 hours.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a lot less time with these characters, so it makes sense that they would have less depth to explore.
And that's what I actually kind of like about this show, ultimately, is, like, even though a lot of it is, like, there's a lot of, like, fist fights and sword fighting. One, that's just my jam. Give me a battle anime. I love that shit. But specifically here, what it helps with is by making these characters fairly simple but extremely emotional and prone to, like, bouts of, like, bursts of, like, you know, martial violence.
Classic Danganronpa bad decision making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially with the accelerated time frame of, like, yeah, you have, like, a couple hours basically to find this. And Monokuma straight up reveals to the group what usually would be a reveal, which was, like, late into one of these games. He says, no, I'm broadcasting this shit. I want them, like, I want to take down the Future Foundation. Like, Monokuma just kind of putting all the cards on the table, being like, no, this is my final battle with the Future Foundation.
I thought that was very good. I think the idea of,
it's cool as hell.
Get all that shit out of the way. Get to the meat of it. Danganronpa has always had a problem with brevity. So it's good to get a series that seems to just, like, be about hurrying along to the good parts.
Which is the, like, big emotional conflicts.
Yeah.
Jen. Yeah. I was, like, just going to say, it's not just a battle between, it's not just a battle between Monokuma and Future Foundation. It's specifically Monokuma, like, doing a grudge match against Naeke, just being like, hey, you and me, one of us is going to come out of this, so bring it on, motherfucker.
Yeah. It rocks. Monokuma being vengeful is funny. I like the idea of, like, because, like, in the previous games, he was, like, really kind of just smug and in control. He was like, haha, I'm great, and you guys are stupid, and fuck you, die. You're gonna all kill each other because I am your god, and haha. And in this, he's, like, it feels a lot more even. Like, Monokuma isn't really in the position to fuck with the crew. It's very, very directly like, okay, I can't just kill you straight up because it will make you look good. I have to make you kill each other. So I have set this trap for you, and you got, like, a day for you. Like, you got, like, 6 hours before you pass out and a murder happens. And solve my murder puzzle, whatever. You're not going to solve it. Fuck you, die. But I'm pulling out all the stops.
Yeah, this is, like, and vengeful spirit. Like, you know,
yeah,
the implication, I mean, that Go ahead.
Monokuma is not like a spirit. He's a robot. No. He's a symbol used by the bad guys. And sure. So that's
that. What I guess I would say, like, vengeful spirit in like the sort of like narrative sense that he has returned and he is angry.
I don't really read it like that. I think it's very, very like, it's more of like a cornered, like they've cornered the opposition. Yeah. Well, cornered hyena. Is that like a turn of phrase or
is it?
I have no idea. I was thinking they cornered the opposition. And now the despair guys are just like really lashing out with everything they got.
I thought I had heard the phrase like a cornered animal is at its most dangerous.
Yeah, cornered animal.
That's not like a phrase. That's just like objective truth.
Yeah,
I think the phrase is that a cornered rat will bite the cat.
Okay, which,
I mean, I would turn it to say a cornered bear doesn't care.
Yeah, but it's funny you mentioned cornered. Life developments have happened in my life where I work with animals now. It's a lot of fun. I really like my job now, but that's neither here nor there. Yeah, so the basic like plot.
Kiri, we're not animals.
Yes, we are.
We're civilized human beings. You hear the way she talks about us? Jesus. That's well, maybe like, Jen's an animal.
There's the hyena.
Jen's anyway. Some kind of creature. Yeah. I'm normal, I promise.
But yeah. So basically, the ending of 1A... It's just easier, just in general. We're going to kind of refer to these, like, groups of episodes as, like, 1A, 1B, 1A, you know, 2A.
1A, 1B, 2A, 2B, yeah.
Etc.
Oh, shit, 2B.
Hero Buckland, back everybody! I hope she's doing well. So,
she isn't the dub for this, so.
Yeah, I know, that's the joke.
Okay.
Yo, they got Android ass in this show? What? They probably do. I probably just spoiled something for somebody.
Spoiled V3.
God, I spoiled V3. I spoiled version 3 of Danganronpa.
Anyway, so yeah, the punctuation of 1A is Chisa, basically she's like killed and she falls onto the table as the dramatic ending music starts swelling and playing, and then they cut to 1B of her going, ah, shucks, I died.
Yeah, it rocks.
It's very funny.
So, let's talk about Chisa for a little bit, because the way she's presented, she's like a very spirited homeroom teacher, and I think she's a very charming character.
Mm-hmm.
So Chisa is she is the homeroom teacher, as we discover in 1B, she is the homeroom teacher of the class that would become the ultimate despair.
Right.
Yeah. And she is a spirited teacher. The whole first episode of Despair Arc is about her getting the class, getting the gang together. And there's a lot, she's a very charming character. She has a lot of like active enthusiasm for what she does. And obviously like they're setting her up to like, she's going to get like tortured to death. And that's going to be like everybody, like the impetus for everybody to fall. Like they're going to do something fucked to her. I guarantee it. But also like, you know, oh, actually, no, because she lived until the
well,
second.
She lived. Well,
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what's going on.
Anyway, regardless, you know, she's a very spirited teacher, and she basically wins over the original cast. Like,
she's kind of that trope of like, if you look at a kind of movie like Cheaper by the Dozen or something like that.
Okay, Danko, where the hell is this going?
Where is she going, Jen?
She basically just goes to each character and like mimics their personality or like approaches them in a way that gets them to respect each other, to respect her. Like, with Babyface Gangster, she pulls out a small knife.
Gangster.
God.
With Babyface Gangster, she pulls out a small knife and she's like, I'm gonna cut your fucking fingers off if you don't come to class.
I don't think she said that. I think Kuzuryu offers that, like, oh, are you trying to cut my fingers off? And she's like, well, if you don't come to class, I will be presented with no options.
And Kuzuryu goes like, I like your moxie.
Yeah, Kuzuryu is like, ah, oh, that shit rocks. Like, I really like that that's how they present Chisa, as like she is just she sees what she needs to do and she's just more than everybody in the class. Like she plays their game. Which feels like somebody playing Danganronpa 2. which I think is a really interesting thing. Like,
yeah,
a lot of her, like, I don't know. She's cool. I like her. I'm a big fan. It is a shame that they killed her off pretty much immediately in the first season, but there's probably a reason for it. I will give Danganronpa. Oh my god, sorry. I will give Danganronpa a modicum of trust.
And so, like, basically, yeah, she's, like, kind of, like, the main character of, like, of Despair Arc. Like, a lot of the events are kind of gonna revolve around her, mostly because, like, she is trying to rally this group. And I do love, like, even though it's a lot of, like, quick montages, because there's 16 of these kids that you gotta introduce very quickly and get them on board, so most of the characters are introduced in 30-second flashes.
We've also already met them before, which is, I think, yeah, an important thing. Like, we know who Hiyoko is.
Mm-hmm.
So just, yeah, like, introducing her and being like, oh yeah, she's an asshole. Here's Hiyoko. She sucks just as much as she did in the start of Danganronpa 2. Remember her? And it's like, okay, done. We're on to the next one.
It is helpful, though. It is helpful, though, that she is an asshole in, like, a situation with much, much smaller stakes.
Yeah, like, we were talking about this before, but the fact that, like, Hiyoko does her thing, but, like, nobody's in danger, makes her infinitely more tolerable. Makes her, like, infinitely more tolerable the way she is.
Jen, you had something you wanted to say?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, this bit is kind of, much like the flash through the various remnants of despair, like at the beginning of the show, this bit is pretty much meant for people who have played Danganronpa 2 to go, oh yeah, it's that guy, and they're doing the thing. Like when Nekomar and Nidai is just, they come into the men's room and he's taking such a big shit that he blows out the entire wall of the bathroom. But
it is much preferable here because they don't spend an entire game on that gag. They do the shit gag, and then they're just like, okay, Nekomar is just a big muscle guy. Go, go, go.
Yeah, like they do the shit gag, and then you can, like, trust that they're not going to do the same gag for the next 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Just if nothing else, then for like, if nothing else, for like logistics reasons.
Yeah, because like you got 12. It's like, I feel like with some of the writing of this show, I feel like somebody at Lerche basically had like a speed timer like next to Kazutaka Kodaka with like a spritz bottle as well, and just be like, the moment he started going on some tangent about like some character, they just spritzed him. It's like, no, focus.
I really enjoy it when they're going to catch Akane Owari as she's doing her daily jump,
like
off
gremlin
the top of,
jumping off the top of a roof,
up the top of the whole school, and then like they send her like dive kicking downward by cooking meat at the bottom, and then they fucking crucify her, and they're like, yeah, we got her.
I like that gag specifically because in the next couple of character intros, you see Akane still on that cross as they're basically carrying her around as they are gathering the rest of the class, because they find this huge, like, fucking staircase to the netherworld that fucking
Gundam Tanaka,
that Gundam fucking built. It's so funny. It's so dumb.
It is a very good and flavorful way to introduce members of the cast. I like that they actually, like, I like how snappy it is, because snappy is not usually something that I associate with Danganronpa.
Uh-huh.
And by God, these character introductions are, as we said, lightning fast. Everybody is immediately represented at their most flavorful. And, like, even the Nekomaru shit thing, like, what that's used to characterize Chisa, because when the whole building explodes, what does she do? She jumps in front of her students and, like, shields them with her body. It is cool. It's very cool. It gives the gang opportunity to, like, achieve characterization that they wouldn't have gotten in, I don't want to say wouldn't have gotten in the game, but that, like, it comes at a pace way faster than the game would typically come.
Right.
And it comes at a rate, it comes at a depth, or, well, it comes at an extreme that the game can't really illustrate.
Right.
Yeah, and they also do a thing where at the end of each segment, they do a split-second cut to their 8-bit versions from Danganronpa 2.
But yeah, the those cuts are cute. They're again, this is like a weirdly, like, really well put together pair of seasons for everything that surrounds them.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and another thing that, like, also helps is that, like, yes, they have, like, very snappy, very funny, like, you know, decently funny gags, like when Sonya is the only one who can get Kazuichi to, like, show up to class, and she starts doing, like, the Akuma teleport, like, further and further away from him, and, like,
it's good that they understand that he's repellent, and they just, like, she just pieces out.
And
the pacing on that scene was so good too. Like,
it is so funny. They don't waste a second, but they also know when to slow down, because when they are introducing Chiaki, that is when the show really slows down and decides we need to introduce Chiaki, and for a very important reason, because her characterization in this show is going to be somewhat different from her characterization in the game.
Chiaki's kind of the emotional core of Danganronpa 2. Like, she is the most important character, I think, in if she is not the most important character in Danganronpa, she's like top three easy.
Yeah, in terms of, like, core to the story, the core to,
like
understanding the emotional depths of the game, Chiaki is certainly up there.
Yeah.
I think even just, like, everything, like, mm-hmm. if you understand two characters in Danganronpa, it's, like, Makoto and Chiaki.
Yeah.
Maybe Junko and Chiaki instead. But, well, like, yeah. Chiaki is, like, inarguably one of the most important characters. And it's very obvious that she is going to be the emotional core of this show.
Mm-hmm.
And she rocks. I love how she is, how she interacts with the rest of the cast.
Right. Jen, like, has a point real quick.
Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, it's also weird that she's even here to some degree, because, like, her whole thing in Danganronpa 2 was that she was a AI creation, so immediately by them introducing her as a flesh and blood person, it kind of tips you off to, like, okay, something is different here from where I understood it. And also, just, like,
so right. I mean, I am not going to say she definitely dies at the end, but she definitely dies at the end. Like, this is the same thing as Chihiro. Like, the AI, like, this is, I mean, I at least this, I feel like this is like how it is telegraphed. Because we know that Despair Arc, as the name implies, ends with everything going extremely poorly.
Yeah, like, I mean, so something that I appreciate about this show, and it is, I mean, how well it executes this idea will be seen when we go through the whole show. But one of the things I think a really effective prequel can do is use the fact that, like, the audience is aware of what happens to hang a particularly heavy sword of Damocles basically over the characters and the audience, so that it just, like, even though these first couple of episodes in the Despair Arc are, you know, pretty chipper and happy and fun, and it's great to see these characters just having a good time, but the title of the arc and where you know where the story goes colors it just a little bit. I think that's, like, I don't know, it's kind of basic prequel writing, but it's important to get.
It's also teasing bits at the end of each Despair episode that's like, oh, pieces are being put into place. Like, the first one, you get the bit where they're making the plans to make Izuru Kamakura, and, like, the one immediately after that is you see Kuzuryu's sister enter the classroom where...
enters into the reserve course.
Yeah, and, like, that whole side-scrolling murder case in Danganronpa 2 was all about her, so you know immediately, oh, things are going to happen to her specifically.
Right. It's one of those things where you really have to, like, take advantage of the fact that the audience should have at least a basic familiarity of what's going on, and I think it works here, like, fairly well.
It's good. I think that there is a palpable sense of dread, even as, like, things are going well, because you could see all the dominoes. It is like watching somebody set up a line of dominoes, because, like, you're like, okay, you know, these are gonna fall. All this potential energy is gonna get converted to kinetic. The last domino is going to fall. We are going to see at least one of these characters die. Many of these characters are going to turn around and be like, okay, now we just need to kill everybody. And it's gonna be like, no, I can't believe you would do that. And you can believe they would do that. Yeah, they do that.
Exactly.
You've seen them do that. You see the consequences of them doing that. But like a good prequel.
Mm-hmm.
Good prequel gives you hope. They go like, okay, you know, maybe they don't end up being evil mass murderers.
Yeah, you hope that, like, you know, on some level Anakin doesn't turn to the dark side or whatever, right? Like,
yeah, you want to believe for a moment.
Mm-hmm. But also the show is not dicking around it. Like, look, you know how this goes. We're just kind of like setting these up as a moment to breathe.
I mean, like, Kuzuryu's sister gets fucking killed. We know that for a fact. So when she's introduced, the timeline for that accelerates. You visibly see, like, oh, this is the catalyst for something horrible to, like, happening.
Yeah, like, directly into two and, like, all this shit, right? Something that I also appreciate is that, like, I kind of want to applaud, like, kind of the writing team, I guess, that, like, worked on this show, because, you know, game writing and anime writing is obviously a different thing, but, like, prequel writing, you kind of have an opportunity and also, like, this difficulty where you're kind of doing backfill. You're kind of, like, doing the work that the original either wasn't able to capitalize on or didn't. Like, much like how they are seeding the Azuro Kamakura stuff, like, immediately, and starting to give that just a little bit more depth. Because in 2B, you have, like, you have this moment, like, they focus on Hinata, right? And most of the scenes of Hinata is that he's at that fountain. And he's kind of lamenting. He's looking on at the main, like, he's looking at the main school. And, you know, he meets Chiaki there and he starts a friendship with her. But then you have, like, what's his name? The former headmaster. Tengen. Tengen comes to him and basically tells Hinata, like, well, have you made a decision yet? And, like, basically, you know, at first he's doing the kind old man, like, shtick, where he's, like, trying to give him time and stuff like that. And then basically threatens Hinata of, like, well, you can't pay for this and you could just go back to your old school, you know?
I wouldn't say he threatens so much as just gives him a way out. Just being like, hey, destroying yourself like this, it is not worth it. You can go back. You can have your normal life.
You give people a way out by telling them that they can go back to mediocrity.
Yeah, because
it is not benevolent for him to be like, oh yeah, you know, you're in the super special awesome school where you could potentially be a cool guy. Yeah, you could be in the peerage, but, like, you know, it's difficult. If you can't afford it, you could just go to shit fuck, like, idiot school for morons. You could go to shit fuck prep and go die in a fire. You could low-tier god yourself right now, if you really want.
Now, Chiaki, I think, is the one that, like, actually starts to kind of give him an out that he isn't really aware of, where she actually just says, nah, being assigned this role, shit, like, it sucks. You have, like, more freedom, man. Like, appreciate that. She doesn't know it yet, but, you know, Jen, you have a point.
I was just gonna say, at the same time, though, it's like, I get how she might feel like that because she's a teenager and stuff, but also just like getting into the school is like one of the luckiest things that can happen to you, because basically once they scout you and you get in, like, you don't even have to go to class and, like, you are set for life. It's basically,
but she still feels pressure, you know, and she's trying to, like, tell Hinata, it's like, man, all this glamorous stuff that they tell, like, basically she's saying, like, all the glamour and all the, like, advertising the school does, it's like, yeah, it's great, but it's also kind of, like, the side that isn't being shown here.
I think Chiaki is well-meaning, but I think her complaint about, like, being at the awesome school for awesome kids is kind of, like, the sort of thing that, like, kind of a gifted kid problem. Like,
Yep.
Understandably, it's even less, so
like gifted kid problems when people when like as a former gifted kid who had gifted kid problems, they are actual problems, expectations and whatnot. But sure. Like I think if you were a gifted kid and you went to the gifted kid school that would sit that like where like you didn't have to go to class and your entire life was taken care of and you never had to actually get a job because like people would just be like, oh yeah, that's the ultimate that's the ultimate like tech deck player, like the ultimate finger skateboarder. They can just we give the national budget of like $2 million a week is just
we give Johnny Succotash to do tech deck tricks.
Yeah, Johnny Succotash does tech deck tricks for like $2 million for a $2 million biweekly pay, and like that's just what he does. He's a national treasure. Like the school that does that for you, like there is no big burden. Like you're just like the best. Hinata, like complaining to Hinata, who is like a normal guy who is going to like go work at a fucking Lawson's when he's in college, if things don't get better for him,
yeah,
like complaining about that is kind of just making the problem worse. But which also, like, I do think Chiaki is like a very normal person, so him encountering her is a net positive, even if she does kind of be like, oh yeah, I'm having man, the problem with money is that it's so difficult to store all my millions of dollars.
I bought another like Audi, you know.
Oh
like,
man, yeah, I bought another Audi and I don't know where to park it.
Yeah, like, so like, but
you think you have it rough. Helicopter parking is an arm and a leg.
I'll tell you what, the BMW dealership, man, they're booked up till those next guys week.
Are dicks.
But here's the thing, like we were talking all about this also earlier, how like if you think about HopeSpeak as a concept, and I think this show explores this a little better, where like if you told Johnny Succotash that he's the best tech deck player in the world or whatever at 15 years old, that shit is gonna go straight to his head. And that was like one of the big problems and continues to be the problem for the original cast in Danganronpa 2 in this show, is that yeah, they're like, of course they think they're king shit of fuck mountain.
Oh yeah,
they have been told all their life they are king shit fuck mountain.
Yeah, and like it ties into the future arc as well, because like here you are with a bunch of people who have graduated from this place and they've decided, yes, we are capable of just condemning a person to die.
Oh like, yeah, we're like the 30 seconds away from murdering anybody.
Like, in fucking 2A, you get the fucking class president guy to just tell like Makoto to kill himself. Like, without even a second thought.
To be fair, his metamorphosis into low-tier god is incredibly funny. You come into the school and you ride my dick. We kick you out and you keep coming back in.
His whole speech about how, oh yeah, we're just gonna keep killing people until we get rid of despair, and as soon as despair is gone, it's all peachy. Like, ends justify the means. It's yeah, like
God. Absolute psychopath.
Elon well, Musk decision making.
Well, yeah, there it is. But like, yeah, it's like it makes sense, and I think like this sort of like it works for this show in specific. Like, it actually uses some of the best parts of like Danganronpa's writing style, an idea of like, here's a bunch of highly, extremely talented, extremely emotional people in a powder keg situation, and you just shake it up.
And for-profit schooling is to blame for all this.
Yep. Yeah, because like they make explicit reference to the fact that like the school president guy, like Munakata, is like, like he's opening up a like Western branch basically of Hope's Peak. Like the idea is that he's leading the charge to like put up a Hope's Peak in like the US or something like that. And
can you imagine American Hope's Peak? Oh my god.
Shut so, that like, shit down.
That would be the peak of comedy. Can you Johnny fucking suck- imagine?
That's
Johnny Succotash, the ultimate tech decker, would kill somebody with a lead pipe.
Without even a second thought, he wouldn't even feel like all the characters in Danganronpa.
They wouldn't even be in a death game.
They would just kill each other. Here's the thing, Monokuma would set up the death game and be like, okay, you kids need to kill each other to advance. And they all just start.
They'd be like, fuck yeah, we get to kill each other? Oh my god, yeah, dude, I'm waiting.
It's like Call of Duty. You get like...
Bro, this is just like Fortnite.
The Mr. I want to get the Fortnite burger, Monokuma.
The Mr. Beast of Danganronpa would be like, and today we're blowing up an entire suburban neighborhood. Like and subscribe.
To be fair, blowing up an entire suburban neighborhood is good praxis. Fuck homeowners associations.
Yep. Just fucking God, Mr. Beast going to take it to like Hope's Peak.
Mr. Beast going to Hope's Peak would be that's just literally that is who is behind season 3 is Mr. Beast.
God.
Hey guys, I trapped a bunch of stupid social justice warriors in a room together and now they're gonna kill each other. Like and subscribe for the epicness.
And then it's like the thumbnail
sponsored by Elon Musk.
The thumbnail is Mr. Beast, but with half the Monokuma face superimposed on.
Hey guys, I give myself NG code poisoning as a joke. Ugh, and then he dies.
God, America! Wait! Like Ben Shapiro, fucking commenting on Hope.
Ben
speak.
Shapiro would Ben like listen. If Ben
he would
Shapiro's
get
Monokuma,
so mad. No, he would get so mad that he doesn't get introduced.
He's about like, the same height, so, like, it works.
What if I told you that you all had to kill each other?
Now, the thing they don't tell you, and the thing that the loony left doesn't want you to know, is that there is a bracelet, and every 4 hours that you're wearing, you will pass out. It will administer a sleeping drug. And it's true. They don't want you to know it, but it's true.
Sponsored by today's book, The Jordan Peterson Experience.
God. So here's the thing. Jordan Peterson, Danganronpa, like, you would be dead from the meat-only diet before anybody
yeah,
could kill
he would,
you.
He would set up the fucking, like, cafeteria to be, like, it would be full of, like, raw meat and unpasteurized milk.
Says the highest kill count here belongs to Scurvy. I don't know whom among you is Scurvy, but... Oh no, Jen got kicked into...
It kicked me from being inactive. Okay, I'm back.
Oh my
now.
God. Okay, we need to get off this train as fast as we can. That was Discord saying, okay, this goof has gone on for long enough. Oh my God.
God.
Oh God, I'm crying.
Anyway.
So anyway, Chiaki gets
it's
all her friends together.
The greatest game.
Chiaki gets all her friends together, like... We talked about this earlier, where it's like, it is a little... It's a little twee that it talks about, like, gaming as, like, a social thing and it brings them all together, but it's appropriate. Because it's Danganronpa.
Yeah, the thing is also that it's, like...
It's a little self-congratulatory.
Yeah, but Chica's using it because, like, okay, so... Chiaki, this is, like, the one thing that you do and the one thing that you're good at. And it's basically her using that to, like, pull people in on her talent in a way as well, and kind of just using that to be like, hey, people like having fun sometimes.
Right, and it's like
I think this ties into her characterization in Danganronpa too, because Chiaki's whole deal is that, like, you know, the reason she's so good at the reason she's, like, so effective is that she uses her talent isn't really, like, a competitive talent, even though, like, video games do tend to be competitive. It's more of just, like, it's a talent to bond with others.
Yeah, it's, like, it's not that Chiaki is, like, she's not winning Evolution, but she's running the side pool with her friends playing some dumb fighting game that she likes on Super Nintendo.
Right? I love how you get a... I love how they mimic a bunch of Nintendo 64 games in this segment, and they all look very appropriate for that specific era. Like,
hey,
is
Chiaki the best at H games as well?
Hinata, I found the secret route. I found the secret gay route. You do this.
But yeah,
she loads up Honey Select and she's like, Hinata, watch this shit, and just fucking makes a mutant. I can make the most fucked up guy in Honey Select. Behold, Chad Bangarang.
But yeah, it's like, I like, you know, she has, like, you know, they play Smash Brothers and they all play characters like themselves, but it's like, it's funny when, like, Gundam and Nekumaru keep, like, yelling at each other because it's like, oh, if you keep fighting, we're gonna fall off the edge or something like that. which is also kind of like just like a slight slick like throwaway gag to the events of chapter 4 of game 2 to a certain degree.
Oh yeah, they do kill each other, don't they?
Yes, they do. Man. And it's like, yeah. So they have
these, when like, it happens.
Yeah. Like, I like that many of the references like in this show that to like events and 2 that aren't specifically like this is the lore relevant bit are like, that's like, that's all right. Like, that's sort of like a fun little poke at the people who played Danganronpa 2. It's like, yep, here's the thing.
Yeah. And I also like how much like how they put the Ultimate Dancer in a situation where it's like, okay, she can still be mean even in non-threatening situations. They make Komaeda disgusting to his classmates even in a school scenario. Just like,
we'll talk about Komaeda in a little bit, but there's one more thing I wanted to bring up with the like gamer stuff.
I was gonna basically mention with Fortune Strength, I love that. Right. I love how that's the one game he's just the best at because it involves a bunch of bullshit dice rolls.
Yeah, right, because he's like, oh, for some reason they put him on Fortune Street. It's like, oh, well, he rolls like 10 die. It's like, oh, will you look at that. I will say, like, Komaeda,
oh shit, this reminds me, I love how Komaeda is introduced.
Yeah, I was about to say the same thing. Soda,
and then like he's like, oh, that's weird, I didn't get any. And the fucking truck lands on top of the machine and just spits out Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, and it's so funny that just basically, like, the next scene, he has, like, pyramids of Dr. Pepper on his desk.
This man has so much Dr. Pepper. He's getting diabetes tonight.
It is a funny introduction. It's like, again, it is really fun to see these characters in a much more low-stakes thing.
Yeah, like, I feel like didn't they do this with, like, Danganronpa 3 or whatever, where there was, like, the talent development thing, or was that some... Or was it
V3?
So didn't they do that in one of the Danganronpa games? Because I swear they did.
So V3, one of the modes, like kind of like the bonus mode that you get either after beating the main game or like just unlocked kind of from the start, is called, like, I think Salmon Run or something like that. It's basically this big like not super complex. It's like a mix of like a board game with like RPG development stuff, but it's just a big excuse to have characters from 1, 2, UDG, and V3 just interacting with each other. Yeah, they're just kind of chilling.
I think Danganronpa characters are infinitely more tolerable when they are just dudes hanging. Because they don't seem to have a... Because I think, like, one of the big problems for me, at least, is that characters don't seem to have a sense of urgency. I feel like the format here, it lends itself better to a more urgent setting and also, like, making things actually more... you know, reasonably brisk, you know? Mm-hmm. And then, like, the part two, the lack of urgency in part two is really nice because it means that these characters now have room to breathe and you can spend, like, 24 episodes of Chisa just getting the gang together because, like, there's no murder going on. There's no reason to suspect murder is going on. It is just dudes chilling and they're straight up chilling.
Right. I think, like, I really liked Salmon Mode in a lot of ways because the funny thing is with that is it even has, like Hinata but fucked up, you know, Azura Kamakura as, like, a playable character in that mode. And it's just really funny to have a bunch of characters take the piss out of him. Like, it is so funny, like, in that mode of, like, I have always thought, like, If I was making important decisions at, like, Spike Chunsoft and I needed to come up with another Danganronpa project, like, you know the Persona Q, like, games, those two games in which it was just a crossover of, like, the first game was, like, a crossover of 3 and 4 characters, and then Q2 was, like, a cross between 3, 4, and 5 characters? Like, basically just kind of do that where it's just an excuse to have the gang chilling.
Danganronpa is pretty good when it's just dudes rocking.
Yeah.
Yeah, but with the sole exception of Teruteru, who somehow manages to be even worse in this than he was in the video game.
So, like, I don't really feel like Teruteru just feels kind of the same.
Yeah.
I am glad that Teruteru is just like, he is at very least responded to in the fiction with the same sense of, like, fuck off that, like, he deserves.
It is great that, like, yeah, it's not great when he is being like the huge creepazoid, but it does allow for Chiaki to do the uppercut, and she says something along the lines of, "That uppercut is special to me."
Just such a funny love line. The line, "That uppercut is special to me."
And she basically just describes an amazing fight she had, and it turns out she's just describing the plot to Double Dragon 2.
Oh, it's real good. It's I love that, because the thing is that it's not like she doesn't really hype it up. She just says that, like, the reason it's special to me is, like, and then she just explains the plot of Double Dragon 2. And, like, the whole scene is super dramatic, and I people are asking, like, oh, and, you know, she gets asked, like, oh, you know,
did that happen?
I didn't realize that you lived that kind of life. But she was like, oh, yeah. You know, and like Double Dragon 2. I did a whole bunch of things in Double Dragon 2. And it's like, oh, shit, okay.
But here's the thing. It's like they really, like, in that, like, little scene, they do capture, like, truth be told, I have always loved it, like, when I would go to cons or whatever. And I just found a bunch of people that are fairly like-minded. And we just talk about, like, shit that we like. Or just, you know, with friends in general. Just be like, hey, I really like this thing. And sharing, like, with you why I like this thing. It's like, I think Chiaki, like, they're like, the way they are written, the way she's written as, like, a, you know, gamer is one of, like, well, one of the positive aspects of this, like activity is the fact that there are so many video games that means that you can just share the experience with someone else in a, like, positive way. And it's like, that's kind of cool.
Chiaki, I feel, is somebody who appreciates media for, like, the kind of reason that I feel media is, like, the media is, like, properly appreciated as, like, a conversation. Like, she appreciates media as a conversation, right?
Exactly. Like, the reason she's bringing up Double Dragon 2 isn't because, like, oh, it's the best of the Tecmo whatever, like, series of beat-em-ups. She's just saying, like, yeah, this is, like, a really fun and important game to me. I really liked it. This is why I liked it. You know? Like, it was a great
It's also a solid goof. I like the class thought that she had really just taken out a dude who... taken out a really bad dude, and they didn't even question why this, like, 4'10", fucking 90 pounds soaking wet, bean, fucking tiny bean nerd just fucking smoked a dude who was, like, smoked a dude in the 80s, like...
Yeah,
she wasn't even around for that.
Yeah, but God, yeah,
yeah.
I also liked Peko Yama a lot. I always liked Peko Yama a lot, but I liked that, like, the way Sensei won her over, the way Chisa won her over is by, like, you know, not flinching when she brought the shinai to her neck. I thought that was cute.
And also specifically that she was, like, caught off guard, just being like, she's fast or something.
Yeah,
like
it's
that.
Great.
Or like, not she's fast, but it's like, how'd she sneak up on me?
How'd she sneak up on me? I love that shit. It's so, like, obviously the thing with Peko is that she is a, like, pastiche of samurai tropes. And her whole deal is that, like, you know, and a lot, and, like, the joke of her character is that she's a really cool samurai type.
Uh-huh.
And she's doing all that in a world that kind of doesn't respect those rules.
Or doesn't really even need it to a certain degree.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't respect the rules that she follows. Like, so, like, you know, she's meditating and it's like her being kind of weird. And this is, and, like, it's her disrupting the class, like, essentially disrupting the class because she's being a truant student because she's going off to meditate in the dojo. And her sensei comes over and, like, not literally, but, like, more or less grabs her by the ear and drags her to class. It's just, it's cute. I love that these characters are, like, they are believably teens, I think, in the sequence, and I think it's very charming.
Mm. Yeah. It's fun how occasionally she just goes for her sword and Kuzuri is like, no, we talked about this. You just have to be a normal student. Don't do this.
Kuzuriyu definitely keeps, like, a spray bottle filled with water for when Peko goes to kill somebody, just like, no.
Yeah.
No. Bad.
Yeah, but, like, God, it is just really fun. It's fun to see these characters having fun, enjoying each other's company, And they still fight and bicker and just, but they're like bickering in the way teens bicker, you know? They're like...
Yeah. And, you know, I know I said I dreaded Hyoko right at the beginning because she is just like kind of how she is at the start. But like, she almost immediately is toned down. And I feel like definitely that it's definitely aware of that she can be, that she is abrasive at the start of Danganronpa 2 and kind of calms and kind of calms her, kind of like tones her down to a level where she's way more tolerable and like kind of right back to where she was when she's likable.
Yeah. Like, worst insult that she flings at Mikan is like saying that she's a rotten orange.
Yeah, well, which Mikan is like still sucks.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she says I do like that she I do like that Chisa calls everybody rotten oranges because they're being like,
but
they're wasting also, their youth.
And yeah, and but also specifically because Mikan is like the word for orange in Japanese. Yeah.
It's cute. I still think Mikan sucks, though, because of the way that the narrative treats her. Like, we get two pussy shots of her. One which is, like, really really explicit with the bag, too. Really
graphic. God. Yeah,
oh my god. So, she has, like, a sports bag wedged between. So, like, I guess we're going to describe, I'm going to describe this for the listeners, because why not?
Let me figure. And editor's note, I'll figure out some funny music to put right about here.
Yeah, so put it, so give me some, so hit it. Hit it, Kiri.
Got it.
So this shot, right, is, so like, it's it comes kind of out of nowhere, but she falls, and she's like,
okay, hold on, real quick.
Her leg.
Editor's note. Describe it like you're describing an art piece at a museum.
All right. So, in this sequence, we see Mikan. It is apropos of nothing, but she simply, she takes a tumble, and we see framed, you know, kind of, you know, very yonic imagery, with the sports bag between her legs, which is partially unzipped, in the shape of a vulva, and her legs are, of course, spread around it. We got shot at the cheekers, we get, ankles front and center, we get, like, you know, her embarrassed face, and like, okay, that's pretty bad. And then we have it happen again, and she's covered in slime this time, and there is a mop, which is obviously phallic imagery, and kind of takes up that, like, the part of the frame that, like, a penis would be if this were a work that was somehow less raunchy but more explicit. And that would take precedent. That is the second time we see her. And then, for some inexplicable reason, because this is a work that was written by a 12-year-old, I don't know who let the 12-year-old on the writing team, but he was there. Teru makes dinner. And, of course, somebody, Hyoko, specifically, puts, horny juice and aphrodisiac, which we refer to as horny juice, into the stew. Which, by the way, I will say, Teru sucks ass at plating. His plating is god-awful. Put some herbs on top, you fucking chump. You are supposed to be the ultimate chef. I would smoke your ass any day. Everybody's horny as fuck. And, of course, Mikan wants to borrow Pekoyama's shinai, because it is phallic, and she kind of strokes it off in the same way that, in a work that similarly would be more explicit but less crass somehow.
She even uses the line penis. Just the tip.
Literally, yeah, she does use the line just the tip.
God. Thank you, Madam Presenter. The bidding will begin on these pieces starting at the budget of 12 billion.
I will pay you $50 to take it. that Mikan would say.
The horny scene is not very good.
One funny bit with the horny scene is just like Komaeda just sitting in the corner just being like, damn, Hope, huh?
You had that as like a wallpaper, didn't you?
No.
Extremely cum-brained franchise, as it turns out. Danganronpa.
But yeah, like, the ending song for the Despair arc each time is
Zettai Kibo Birthday.
Yeah.
Sung by Megumi Ogata in character as Komaeda,
yeah,
by the way.
And it's Komaeda singing about how he wants to take Hope behind a tree and just to make love to it.
What I believe the word
I didn't listen to
used
the lyrics.
I believe the wording is something along the lines of, I want to take hope under the bleachers, something like that. It's Zettai, Zettai.
All right, well.
Anyway.
That's kind of much. Is this show, could turn it down a little bit. I know it's about youth, but.
All right, hold on. We're looking at a translation of the lyrics real quick. I get a kanji to English real quick on the Danganronpa.
Can I get an English back to kanji?
But like, also shout out to Danganronpa Wiki. They've been our boys and gals and everyone in between basically since the start of the show. Shout outs to y'all. Let's see, here are the lyrics to Zettai Kibo birthday. I was born for the sake of meeting you, I think, at that moment. So boot up, warm up, hang up, make up, mess up, down up, I give my all to you. That's it, think up, pop out, pull up, brush up is to protect you, the strongest final light of hope. There was something about bleachers at some point. I could have sworn.
There's a full-length version.
There it is. Okay. Let's see. Yeah, here we go. I'm waiting for you with bated breath for the very moment that you wake up. Let's see. I mean, regardless, I like the song. I think it's, like, fun and silly that, it's like this, but yeah.
Yeah. It's... It sounds good, but also it's just, the lyrics are a lot. Like, stuff like cut up, key up, sex up, wrap up.
Hey, if Danganronpa is so good, why didn't they make a Danganronpa 4?
Danganronpa 4 forever.
Yeah.
That's, well.
Oh, no. Fuck, don't give them any ideas.
they're already talking about bringing it back, so.
Fucking are they? Monokuma's gonna come back for one last go.
Generally, though, like, Zettai Kibo Birthday, I really like that song. Mostly because I like Megumi Ogata as a singer. I think they have, like, a really great voice. I just love them as a, you know, seiyuu. And then, you know, I really like the openings and endings, but I've established that before. Like, I think it's interesting how, like, the despair side openings are more light with, like, a little twinge of sinister to a certain degree. Of, like, to establish, like, yeah, things are good now, but it's gonna go bad some point. Whereas, like, you know, Dead or Lie or the ending of The Future Side, they're just straight up just, like, dark, heavy, but also super poppy with the vocals.
Yeah, the ending for Future Side, like, that end credits is making it explicit what, it's basically mirroring what Monokuma said, because it's basically just showing Koma. It's showing Makoto holding up a flower as each of the petals just fall down out of his control. Like, this, we'll get into this as it occurs, but this is mostly, the future arc is mostly about putting him through the ringer as much as possible. And you get that a bit when, like, the end of the second episode of the future arc is just him being consoled by everyone around him, being like, yeah, don't worry, like, you've been through so much, we've got this. And then he wakes up and his hands are all bloody, and he's seeing a knife in the middle of Asahina's gut.
Yeah, so, like, Asahina definitely did not die. I don't believe it for a second that they killed her off. I'm gonna be honest, she's too precious.
But yeah, so, but I think, I mean, did we, not to, like, cut it off or anything, but do we have any other thoughts on these, like, four episodes? Like, I think we...
I do have a thought.
Sure, go for it.
I am super grateful that Danganronpa, not Despair Side, but Future Side, mm-hmm. Does not have a sex fucker in its main cast.
Yeah.
Right? Like... I was conspicuous. I could not get my fingy on it. I couldn't figure out what it was exactly that I was feeling, but the relief was coming from. And then I realized after the fact that it was like, this time around, we don't have a sex fucker. There's no creepy pervert guy with
and the whole his joke. Dick. Yeah, yeah. The whole
with
joke
the whole joke being
like,
he whips his penis out. Even though that guy would be Teru Teru in the B part. But like in part A, yeah, no, there's no dude whipping his dick out. This is literally just like it is no zero sex fuckers. There's no penis weirdos.
honestly, how I tend to choose the title of these shows, penis weirdos,
penis weirdo exclusion zone.
I'll figure it out. I think it will just be somewhere.
Penis weirdos will be shot on site.
Yeah, I think what'll just be, this will be a little treat for the people who looks at the metadata of the MP3. You're gonna find penis weirdos somewhere in the notes.
Penis weirdos sounds like a sequel to Blade Strangers. Like, what if Niantic? God, what if Niantic hit a really hard spot and had to shift gears quick?
God, fuck Blade Strangers. That game sucked.
I have no idea what either of you are talking about.
It's a fighting game that's bad.
Penis Weirdos was way better.
Yeah, Penis Weirdos brought back the parry.
God, listen, people complain all the time about Penis Weirdos gating frame data behind DLC, but let me tell you.
Tell you what, listen.
It also came with three free stages and a new character.
So yeah, how can you complain about Penis Weirdos?
Penis Weirdos universal overhead mechanic, and it's otherwise actually way ahead of its time. Also, first game ever to have rollback. I don't really Cap-cap, truly get hidden on that. Gem in any collection. Download right. Penis Weirdos today.
All right, I think that's it. So I'm excited to go through the rest of this show. Watch this in broadcast order. You can't go wrong.
Watch everything in broadcast order.
That's just a general rule.
Remember watch order debates? What the hell were those?
God.
Oh, this is the order you need to encounter Fate in. And it's no, you start with Fate and you end with whatever's airing now.
It was very funny. I was doing some research. I found out that apparently...
That's also how you keep your thing in Rambo. You start with Fate and then you end with whatever's airing now.
Yep. Well, I found out that apparently a bunch of 4chan shitposters tried to figure out how many times would you have to watch Haruhi in every possible permutation of the watch order, help them solve an open math problem from 1993.
Oh yeah, the Haruhi problem. That was that's been a thing. That was that is my favorite piece of trivia, is that the way that problem got solved is a bunch of shit posters on A just accidentally themselves and doing real fucking math.
It's so funny.
Real time math, big time.
Anyway, if nobody else has any thoughts, I'm gonna forcibly bring an end to this. Thank you everybody for joining us. It's nice to get on this. I know we do these comically long unannounced hiatuses, but life sometimes happens, but I'm glad that
a bitch is sleepy. Get off my back.
Jackie went to sleep basically. Homegirl's
gotta sleep for half a year.
It's so funny to think about. If you go on the UDR timeline, the last tweet that was sent before we started tweeting out today, the hype up the show, was in December that said tweet incoming.
God, so here's the thing. That is way funnier than anything we could have possibly worked up.
But anyway, follow us on social media, Twitter, at UDespairCast. But Jen, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at JBU3 on twitter.com. Most of my stuff is on scanlinemedia.com or patreon.com/scanlinemedia. I also host a narrative gaming book club podcast called Novel Not New, a True End podcast, which you can get to readinggames.online. And Kyrie is going to be on the next episode where we talk about Shenmue 3.
And I have been suffering through Shenmue 3,
God,
I'll tell you that much.
I have heard some of that. I'm excited for
it. Jackie, where can people find you on the internet?
On twitter.com. I am Chairman Mao. That's, Chairman Mao with a U, like Demon King.
Spell yeah.
On twitch.tv I am your lizard friend. That's your lizard friend
spelled out.
I stream every other day or every day or whenever I can, really. Right now I've been doing Elden Ring. I've been
going 1v1 with Millennia. She has been fucking smoking me. She has rolled me up and smoked me like the world's fattest blunt.
You've been doing some fun stuff on your Twitch, yeah.
Yeah, I've been doing some fun stuff on the Twitch. I'm also working on a tabletop role-playing game called Mage Engine. Will probably... I don't think it... Listen, I was shooting for a June release. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it this month. I hope I can. I'll be fighting like a goddamn champion to make sure it comes out.
Summer 2022.
The summer of Mage Engine. Mm-hmm. Follow me on Twitter for updates, or don't, I guess. I can't force you. Even if I could, I wouldn't want to force you. But you should check it out because it is a good. We have made a fun game, and I have gotten help from Kiri and our mutual friend Cherry, who has helped me quite a bit.
You might have heard her. Was she ever on those Danganronpa streams?
Cherry has definitely checked in on the Danganronpa streams.
I
don't know if the Despair Girls VODs are still up. I think it might have been too long. I think Twitch might have eaten them. But I know that I have at least one clip of me eating chips while an extremely dramatic scene played out, and I just apologized for ruining the scene by crunching and munching.
with your like VTuber like avatar hopping up and down as you crunched.
Yeah. Listen, Rael is an extremely fun ping character. Also, I will say, if you subscribe to me on Twitch, you help me get one step closer to getting a live 2D model of my OC. Every step that I get closer, the more power I gain.
And of course, you can follow me at Kyrie Page on Twitter.com. That's where I post stuff, and of course, like with Jen, this is hosted on Scanline Media. This has been a lot of fun. I'm glad that we can come back to it. With luck, we'll be able to get through this this Danganronpa 3 experience together. I'm excited, and I am happy that we are able to get back to it. And thank you, of course, everybody who has stuck with us and are listening. Always appreciate you. But yeah, I think that'll be it. So, I've been Kyrie.
I've been Jennifer.
I've been Jackie.
Class dismissed.
Yeah, see class ya. Dismissed. Get the hell out of here.
Get
the fuck out of here. Don't make me fucking chase you with a broom, you stupid dick.
We'll go on hiatus for another 6 months.
See you in 2024.
Fucker. When they announce some new Danganronpa game.
They're going to announce Danganronpa 4. We're going to still be working through Danganronpa 3. We're going to be like, oh, Danganronpa 4. We're going to get right on it. You won't see us till 2030.
See ya.
We're going to be fucking out here, 40 years old, still doing Danganronpa.
But the world won't give the answers, only reward.